Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winning.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. This is Next Fan Up. My name is Mark Sicko. I am here every Sunday night to recap the week of games that you have just seen. We have some super fans with us tonight. Actually, two super fans whose teams battled this week. From the Atlanta Falcons, we have Tim, our super fan from Atlanta. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing great today, Sicko. Just
nice.
You are as well. So things are definitely looking up.
I'm very excited to talk about your game. I got to watch that one. I was actually watching them at the same time, the Eagles game and the Dallas game, like back-to-back, just in two different TVs. Really exciting. And we also have with us the other side of that game, Dallas superfan Brian. How you doing, buddy?
I was doing pretty good for about the first hour of that game. Not quite as good now, but I'll tell you what, even though we lost, feeling kind of encouraged today. So not down in the dumps after week three. So. Interested to chop it up with Tim and you.
Yeah, for sure. I was very sad how good you looked, especially at the beginning of that game. I mean, we'll get to it, but Whedon was on fire. He was hitting every single pass, literally every pass he tried, up to like 15, until he threw that interception. I think he had not had an incompletion, and he was killing it. I was very impressed. Whedon had a great day, but we'll get to all this. So let's move on to the first game of the week. We have Washington, New York Giants. The Giants won 32-21. I think really the bottom line with this game, right, is we're seeing a lot of sloppy games on Thursday night. In this particular case, we're seeing two teams that are already sloppy, let alone being playing on Thursday night. They play sloppy again, but the better team comes out on top. I think we would all agree the Giants just have a better team, especially because they have Eli Manning, they have Coughlin, they have Odell Beckham Jr. That alone just separates them completely from Washington. Washington does not have a quarterback. Washington does not have a coach that any of us would really have much faith in, and they don't have any kind of a weapon, anything like that. So, yeah, clearly the Giants deserve to win, and that's why I think they came out on top. Anything you guys want to add to this game?
I don't know about you, Sitgo, but I would imagine as a Philly fan, me being a Dallas fan, watching that game, you have to feel pretty good about this division. The start you guys are off to, us being banged up, I don't see either one of those teams anywhere near being threats. This is going to be a two-team race. The Giants won by default. Like you said, Washington doesn't have a quarterback. I thought they'd be able to run the ball a little better. They didn't do that either. So I think that pretty much confirms that Philly-Dallas is going to be the division race for the season.
With us, we're at the same record as those teams. We're 1-2. They're 1-2. I'm happy to not be the bottom of the division. But, yes, I agree with you. I do think we're going to rise above those teams. The Giants may be at our level. We'll see if we're at your level, and we'll see if the Giants are at our level. Moving on, I want to do real quick, guys. We should hit this battle of the superfans. We have one super battle that we get to have on the Sunday night show because we do it that's previewing the Monday night show. In this case, it is the Kansas City Green Bay game. And so I just want to kick these guys off right now.
All right, and we have the Monday night football battle between the Super Bowl I participants, the Kansas City Chiefs, and the Green Bay Packers. Nick is our chief super fan. How you doing, Nick?
I am doing well.
All right. And Brian represents the Green Bay Packers. Probably feeling pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm feeling great. Thanks, Ryan.
All right. So I'm going to start with Nick right away here with the Chiefs. NFL is a crazy sport. Goes from being maybe talking about the Chiefs winning the division, even though it's week two. You know, you can make leaps like that, and a lot of talk radio starts up that way with them beating the Broncos, and maybe they can steal it from Peyton. And then all of a sudden, the two scores in, I think, 9 seconds or something like that, and then the Broncos end up winning, and now the Chiefs have to go into Lambeau Field facing a possible 1-2 because this is a really tough task. Nick, tell me how you and the Chiefs are doing.
Well, it obviously looks really tough, but it's something that we sort of knew was going to look like this around this time of the year, as soon as the schedule came out. I mean, the first quarter of the Chiefs' schedule is very tough. On the road to Houston, at home to the Broncos, on the road to Green Bay, and then at home to the Bengals. And basically, I think most plugged-in Chiefs fans looked at that and said, okay, if we get out of that 2-2, we're probably okay for the season. And really, the road game going up to Lambeau is probably the toughest game on our regular season schedule. And you know, you mentioned the really tough, heartbreaking loss to the Broncos last Thursday night, but you know, I think that's something that works a little bit in the Chiefs' favor in this way. I mean, first of all, just the fact that it was a Thursday night game. So we're going from Thursday to Monday, which means that we have, you know, 10 days to prepare for this. And the Chiefs typically after a letdown game tend to come out and play well. They're definitely going to want to try to make up for that loss, you know, make up for that win that should be on the schedule that they fumbled away literally at the end. The other thing, I mean, you know, again, I'm not going to say that, oh, the Chiefs are runaway favorites in this game. They're not, and they shouldn't be. But it'll be interesting to see how this works. I mean, I can see how the Chiefs come away with a victory here, and that is obviously they have to get some good pass rush, but not only that, because, I mean, Rodgers has been one of the best quarterbacks against the blitz. So Chiefs have to figure out a way of getting pressure on Rodgers, which I think is possible given the fact that that Rodgers is playing behind an offensive line that's not great, and the Chiefs front seven, they can bring the mix of the D linemen and linebackers in creative ways that really create some pressure with the four guys. But then they have to hold up on the back end. And with Sean Smith, our best corner, still out on a suspension, that's going to be really tough. I mean, this sounds like I'm going way back as an example, but it reminds me of actually the way that the Chiefs went to Lambeau in 2011 in this 7-9 season that was generally pretty forgettable, but they actually beat the Packers that were otherwise undefeated that season on the road in Green Bay. And they did it not with like crazy blitz packages, but with faking the blitz, blitzing every now and then, but mostly dropping almost everybody and only having a couple of down linemen there fighting through. And it just really confused Rodgers, and the Chiefs squeaked away with this totally improbable win. And I think the Chiefs game plan has to be similar to that. They're not going to win it by, you know, beating Rodgers offensively in a shootout, but with some really creative defensive scheming and having 10 days to do it, I think they have a chance if things, you know, run their way.
I agree with you. I think they got a shot. But let's head over to Brian and let him rebut a little bit. Brian, you're coming off of, let me know if you were seeking revenge, if this game was very important to you, and will you be focused on the next game at hand? Will the Packers be focused at the next game at hand? And also, tell me, how good is your offensive line? Because he seems to think he can get there. I know the Chiefs have good edge rushers, but tell me what you think about that matchup and the Packers going into week 3.
That's a lot of questions all in a row, Ryan. Now I'll see what I can do to work through them. But basically, I would tend to agree. I'm a little bit concerned about a bit of a letdown game. I don't think the players would come out and say it, but I think we had a little bit extra juice on hand to play the Seahawks. It was obviously a very historic letdown at the end of last year, and a pound of flesh to go along with my beer on Sunday went very well. I enjoyed every minute of that game. As it relates to the Packers' offensive line, I think we have a really good run blocking front. I think Barclay is actually an improvement in that area over Bulaga. But what I'm more concerned about, and I think Nick hit it on the head, is that pass rush. We struggled last week against a good Seattle front. I think Kansas City's edge rushers are probably better, and specifically our tackles are the ones that really struggled last week. So that's one thing that I'll be watching, is how well we protect Aaron Rodgers. We're either going to have to be better up front this week or rely on another clinic from Rodgers as far as pocket presence goes.
Well, excellent job with all those questions I hit at you. I haven't been a host for a while, so that's a host error there. Real quick, let's go to your first 3 weeks. You face Matt Forte, Marshawn Lynch, and now Jamaal Charles. You did a good job against Lynch. I want to hear how you think your defense will do against Jamaal Charles.
I wish I knew. I honestly have no idea. We looked so good against Lynch and so bad against Forte. I think this game is really going to speak volumes about how good our run defense is. Obviously, that's probably the plan of attack for the Chiefs is to see what they can do on the ground. Obviously, they got a world-class talent in Jamaal Charles and kind of limited passing options. So I think I'll have a better answer for you after this game, but I honestly couldn't even guess what it's going to look like. If you gun to my head, I'm guessing we look more like we did against Forte than we did against Lynch.
I'm going to ask Brian a question. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
I'm just interested on the flip side. You know, I mean, Eddie Lacy is banged up for the Packers. Doesn't seem clear. I haven't seen any reports indicating clearly whether or not he's going to play. But, you know, and we all know that Aaron Rodgers is great. I mean, he's probably the best quarterback in the league right now. How dependent is the Green Bay offense on getting some production out of the running game? Is it totally irrelevant? Is it something that, oh, it's nice to have a balanced attack, but they don't really need it? Is it something they're kind of leaning on more now because that's what the offensive line does well? What's the situation there?
No, I think it's going to be really important to be able to mix and match, be able to run effectively against the Chiefs to kind of stifle that pass rush a little bit. Nobody knows whether or not Lacy's going to play. He's supposed to test his ankle out tomorrow. Stark looked fine in relief. He looked like he had a little juice for the Seahawks and showed well that game. And I don't think that we would necessarily lose because Lacy's not there. But getting back to one of the comments you made previously about your game plan back in 2011, I remember that game vividly. You guys really showed the league the blueprint for playing defense against Aaron Rodgers. I don't think anybody had done that to us prior to that game against the Chiefs where we had everybody dropping back into coverage and forcing Rodgers to make throws into tight windows. I think he can do it, but it's going to be a lot easier if we have a competent running game to fall back on.
Nick, I assume you want to avoid a shootout in this game. Do you think the Chiefs will try to slow it down, or do you think that Alex Smith can match the great Aaron Rodgers in a 30-31 game?
Well, I mean, the game against Denver ended up being a lot more high scoring than we expected, and this Chiefs offense, it definitely looks the best it's looked in a very long time. I mean, there's a lot of new firepower we've gotten with the development of Travis Kelce, with Jeremy Maclin being added to the roster. But yeah, no, I mean, if the Chiefs win this, it's going to be not a 45-38 game. If the Chiefs come away with a victory here, it's going to be in the 20s at the highest, in my opinion. I think the Chiefs are going to have to make it a bit ugly. And really, I mean, if they're able to be successful on the ground, I think that has to be their bread and butter.
Well, let's go right into your prediction for the game then. Monday Night Football. Are the Chiefs going to go 1-2 or to 2-1? And what's your score?
If I'm a betting man, I'm not putting money on the Chiefs in this game, but I am the super fan. So I'm gonna just put it out there that the Chiefs are going to win this one 24-21 in a close, surprising, shocking victory after their shocking loss last week.
All right, exciting game. And, Brian, are the Packers going to 3-0?
Well, I certainly think so, although I heard a kind of a crazy stat earlier this week. The Packers have never beaten the Chiefs in Lambeau in all those years. So if they win, it'll be history in the making. I'm pretty confident we can win. I'm thinking we haven't lost a game at Lambeau since about 2013, I think. But I'll pick the Packers over the Chiefs 30-20. Although I will say I'm a little concerned about a letdown game following last week.
That's right, Packers on the revenge tour. Thank you guys very, very much, and we'll see how this battle plays out on Monday night.
All right, so our next game we want to recap is the Cincinnati-Baltimore game. Brian, you took a look at this for us. What did you think? How did this game look? How did these two teams look? How is Simon and his team doing?
You got to be feeling on top of the world. Cincinnati gets the late victory, 28-24 over Baltimore. Good Andy definitely showed up, 383 yards and 3 touchdowns. Cincinnati's kind of owned Baltimore as of late. I think that's 4 in a row over them. And the Ravens Rex, he has to see A.J. Green in his nightmares. A.J. Green has killed him once again. 227 yards, two touchdowns, that long touchdown, that 80-yarder. And Cincinnati has really taken ownership of this division. I can't believe Baltimore's 0-3. I thought they would at least get off the schneid this week. But they're three games back in the division. Their pass defense looks atrocious. They don't look like they can stop anyone. And honestly, offensively, with Joe Flacco out there, and he can throw it to Steve Smith. Steve Smith had another monster game. He seems like he's never going to age. What else does Baltimore have on offense? Their running game is non-existent. I'm sorry, Justin Brissett, for as good a year as he has here, he was a journeyman for a reason before that. I don't see any weapons. Nothing scares me on Baltimore. Even Steve Smith, he's not going to beat you deep anymore. He's just going to get you with that physical toughness. No Terrell Suggs. I don't want to start throwing dirt on Baltimore, but it might be time to press that panic button. Cincinnati looks strong. They have a ton of weapons out there on their side with Green and Sanu, Marvin Jones, Geo, and Jeremy Hill still hasn't played well. So Cincinnati really taking ownership of this division, especially with the injuries that Pittsburgh hit today. So, English Simon's got to be feeling ecstatic over with his tea and crumpets. So feeling good, Bengals fans.
Nice, nice. Yeah, the one thing I thought was interesting in that game, the one play I saw that scared me was that Dalton running for the touchdown and getting hit. Anytime I see a quarterback, even when it's Cam Newton and he does a flip and lands on his feet, I just don't want to see my quarterback getting slammed in the first, four games of the season, taking hits like that where you're just, Cincinnati, it's like you're playing Baltimore. You're going to win this game. Don't kill yourself. But I'm very, I agree with you. I think they look strong, and I do think it might be the time for dirt on Baltimore. Oh, man, that's crazy, but they are looking rough. Moving on to the game, my game, Philly versus the Jets. The Eagles finally get their first win. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Andrew, right away, as soon as this game was basically over at the end, we were up by 2 scores and there wasn't much time left. Andrew was already like on Slack telling me that they gave us this game, but we didn't deserve it, which I'm offended by because we haven't won any yet. You're going to take our first win from us and tell us we didn't deserve it? No, we beat you. We came in your house and we beat you. I think what it really comes down to is our offense is coming together. It is not running on all cylinders by any means. But it did better than that defense, which I have a lot of respect then for. So for us to put up some points and to have that special teams touchdown is all we needed because their offense is really anemic. And we have a very strong defense, not like nothing like theirs, but enough that if you don't have anything to offer on offense, we will slow you down. And we really just shut them down the entire first half. They scored at the very end. They like barely pulled out a touchdown right before half to pull within 17 points. We were already up 24, but it was already over. The game was basically over. We did not score in the second half. The Jets are a very good team, and when we went to the running game and they knew we were going to run it, they were able to slow us down. We still wasted the whole second half and pulled out a win, I think, pretty easily, but they played well. Like I said, I think the offense is getting better. Bradford is still not on. He's off quite a bit, and that's scary for us. But it's his third game in our uniform. We'll see how he does. The 89-yard punt return by Sproles, just beautiful. All along the sideline, just really incredible. But I do have to say a shout-out to the D. The D shut them down for most of the first half until that very end. That was really all we needed to see. We had some great plays. The weirdest play, I don't know if you guys have seen this clip yet, but and this is maybe why Andrew was saying they gave the game away. Brandon Marshall, there's about 5 minutes left in the first half. Brandon, we've just scored to go up 17-0. They're driving. Brandon Marshall gets a nice, it's like a 12-yard pass. He's got a first down. He's almost about at midfield. And while he's going down, he decides to try to lateral it. And it hits an Eagle and just bounces on the ground. We grab it. Our ball, we go right down and score another touchdown to go up 24-0. And with 2 minutes left, they still went down and got a touchdown. But that is crazy. I don't know what Brandon Marshall was thinking to try to lateral when the game is not on the line and you're just trying to get a little extra yards when you already have the first down. Just a huge, huge, huge mistake. And it's just interesting to see, will they go down the same path? Just like they had with Rex, they now have another obviously great defensive coordinator in there as a coach, and he's going to get that defense doing amazing things. but is he going to neglect the offense? Are they going to do stupid bonehead things like that that is going to cost them games? I think we beat them even if they don't make that mistake, but still, that was a really bad thing to do at a very bad time. For us to go by 24, the game was basically over. You guys, any thoughts on Philly, New York Giants, New York Jets? Any thoughts there, Brian, on seeing us win a game finally?
So I saw the stats, saw the highlights, and it looked like Ryan Matthews was running strong and was finding some lanes. I got to ask you, who's the best running back for this offense? Foles' role aside, between DeMarco and Ryan Matthews, it just looks like Matthews is smoother in that in what Philly's trying to do. So who is the better back for that offense?
It's interesting. I think the offensive line played better. I don't think DeMarco wouldn't be able to make those same plays. Ryan is faster. That would be the big difference. Ryan hits the hole a little sooner, and I think he's moving quicker downfield. So maybe it will be that it's Ryan, which would be crazy because we paid DeMarco Murray a lot more. But you never know. I'm glad to have both of them. I'm happy to switch, and I hope they're more balanced in the future. I don't need it to be all Murray. But I think, yeah, I think that's more the offensive line of what you saw today. And us going up against, well, I don't know, that defensive line is supposed to be amazing. But I have to say, I was going back and watching the Jets. Other teams were getting big rushing lanes against them. I think they are some impressive people in that front seven, but that's not a dominant, like, shutdown run front seven that the Jets have. And I think we showed that again, that you could get running lanes and kind of run downhill on them. They don't have a lot of – I think it's that they're bruisers and big kind of tough inside linebackers, but they don't have a lot of speed. So if you can get to them and then get past them, you can really light it up. Let's move on here, guys, to the New Orleans-Carolina game. Brian, you took a look at this. What did you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Carolina gets the win, 27-22. They move to 3-0, tied atop the NFC South. But I'll start with New Orleans. I really thought that they were just going to be a pushover today. I didn't even know if they'd get up to 10 points. But Luke McCown looked pretty good out there, 31-38. Only had the one interception. I guess all those Verizon commercials are paying off. You know, went to his head. He makes him think he could be a starting quarterback out there. So they look a lot better than I thought. But Carolina, I just think they're so underrated, especially Cam Newton. Maybe it's because of his persona on the field, just his brash, you know, doing the Superman in the end zone. But I honestly think, now granted, we're only 3 weeks into the season, Cam Newton deserves a little MVP talk. We talked about Baltimore not having any weapons out there. Outside of Greg Olsen, who had a fabulous day, Cam Newton's got nothing. Doesn't have Kelvin Benjamin, and he's still making for over 300 today again. You know he can run the ball. So Cam Newton, again, should be considered at least early stages. I know we're going to talk about Julio and Tom Brady, but he's playing out of his mind. I really think he's matured, and he's become a great leader for this team, and I think they're going to be a threat all year long. The story that I saw out of this was after the game, Cam Newton was talking about a late hit call that he wanted that he didn't get, and Ed Hockley went up and told him that he was not old enough to get that call, and Cam Newton was just like, huh, what in the world does that mean? So it kind of speaks to, I think there's something to that. I think the guys, you know, your Bradys and your Breezes and your established veterans kind of have a little more leeway on that call, and maybe a guy like Cam doesn't get the call because of, you know, maybe his youth and his athleticism. So I just thought that was a very interesting story, but one guy I definitely love and super fans need to know is Josh Norman, the corner for Carolina. Had the pick in the end zone that won the game. He's coming in this season talking about he was a top five corner, which seemed ludicrous to everybody outside of Charlotte. He's playing like it. He really does look the part of one of these elite shutdown corners. That pick, if you hadn't had a chance to check out the highlight, I urge you to go check that out. It was a crazy acrobatic pick. And he along with Luke Kuechly, who didn't even play in this game, that's a nasty defense. And so Carolina defense is going to keep him in there, you know, week after week. Cam Newton will get, you know, just enough yards, just enough plays. And, you know, that could be another division winning team, 3-0. So looking good for Carolina. New Orleans 0-3, heading to Dallas next week, hoping to make it 0-4.
Man, that's going to be really interesting to see if they can go in and beat you guys. I think they're going to have trouble. Next up, we have the Oakland-Cleveland game. Oakland won this 27-20. I think we're all impressed to see what this trio of Carr, Murray, and Cooper is doing. They've had really solid games. McCown, almost 50 passes in this game, and the team, the Cleveland Browns, only ran 14 times. You just can't do that. The guy's coming back. He's trying to figure things out. I just think that was really rough. Oakland hit him 5 times. More than that, Oakland had 5 sacks. They probably hit him a bunch of times. More than that, just really, really rough. I think similar to the other game, the Washington-New York Giants game, I think Oakland is just a better team. These are both two teams on the rise, but Oakland is clearly far ahead of where Cleveland is at this point. And it's really, I love seeing Oakland knock these teams off. Can Oakland string enough wins together to make the playoffs, guys? Who's going to call this? Where's Oakland at this year? What do you guys think?
In that division, I just don't see it.
Okay, go for it, Tim. We'll start with Tim. We'll go with you guys.
Yeah, I'm with Brian on this one. In that division, I don't see it. Like, maybe in a year. But, I mean, yeah, the AC-DC connection's been really, really good, and it continues to be good. But my question is it enough? And, I mean, even in this game, Cleveland's hanging into this game. Like, teams that are going to make the playoffs, Cleveland's not hanging in those games. So, you know, I mean, that's where my thought process is. So I don't see it yet, but, you know, as someone who doesn't know what his team is, even though they're 3-0, I don't know that I have the right to say who is and who's not making the playoffs after only 3 weeks.
Yeah, I hear that. What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, I think you're on the right track. We don't know what Oakland is because of the wins they have. Now, we got all excited about the Baltimore win last week, but now all of a sudden Baltimore looks like one of the poorer teams in the NFL. I go back to that triplet conversation that we had over the summer, and I think you're right. With Carr and Murray and Cooper, that might be the best young and upcoming triplet group in the NFL. So it's fun to watch them develop. I don't think they're there yet. Still developing. But it's good. But it's going to be a fun ride to watch them. It's going to be an easy team to take on, especially later in the season. They could play spoiler for some people. So Oakland's going to be a fun team to watch. Finally, some hope there out in the Bay Area.
No, for sure, for sure. So now, guys, we're at your game. Now we're at Atlanta-Dallas. I'm very happy that Atlanta pulled this out, but I was very frightened at the beginning because Whedon and Dallas still looked unstoppable even without their major weapons and their best players. So, guys, tell me what was this like. We'll start with Tim because his team pulled out the win. Tim, how did this game go? How did you feel? Where are you at?
I actually like to do this a little bit differently. I wanted to do this quarter by quarter and get, like, where your thought process was at each point, if you don't mind, Brian. You want to humor me on this one?
Yeah, that works. Let's go for it.
All right. You guys are up 14-0. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking we're going to just run it down your throats. You haven't stopped Randall all game long. He's breaking off chunk runs. Whedon's, you know, underneath controlling it. I'm feeling about as good as I felt all season, a complete 180 from after last week when Romo got hurt. I couldn't feel any better after that point.
Yeah, like, legitimately, when we were down 14-0, I looked at the few friends I was with today, and I was like, this game is over. And, like, I don't think I've ever been so legitimately frustrated and upset because Matt Ryan looked awful in the first quarter. You know, he's not hitting his – even not just not hitting targets, he's not hitting areas. And that's been a problem with him, you know, even in the Philly game. And Sitko, you can chime in here if you want. But, I mean, Matt Ryan threw passes directly at Philly players in that game. And he did it again in the New York game where he's throwing, you know, balls directly at Giants. So, you know, for him to get out of this game without a turnover just blew my mind. You know, and then so, like, you know, 14-7 happens, you know, I feel a little bit better. But, again, you guys just drive straight down the field and you score again. So, I mean, realistically, you know, you've got to be thinking that, like you just said, the game's going to – you're just going to milk the clock away and it's going to be done. But I think, like, what, right after that, you guys got up, what, was it 28-14? And that was your last score. And what are you thinking when Whedon throws the interception?
It was a typical play. I'll be honest, I was waiting for one like that all day. I knew he was going to have at least one in him, just one poor throw, one dumb throw, one where we look at him and like, are you really an NFL quarterback making a decision like that? The fact that he kept it to just one, I could kind of live with that, but I kind of knew we were in for one of those, so wasn't altogether surprised. Disappointed, yes, but not really surprised.
Fair enough, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, when that happened, I mean, it was an interception off deflection, which, you know, we've been benefiting off a lot lately. You know, we did it to the Eagles, you know, at the end of the game, and, you know, we're able to lock down that, you know, based off of that. So, you know, it's good that Dan Quinn's making them practice the tip drill. But, you know, going into halftime, you know, down 11, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm like, there's no way that we can compete. And you look at the stat line, and you guys are at like 300 and something yards already at halftime. And we're sitting there at like 125. And based on like historical fact for the Falcons, the past 2 years, they've been a first half team. So I'm thinking that you guys are going to come out and this scoreline is going to look like what the Patriots and Jaguars ended like. And, you know, when you said in our preview that you were giving the Falcons 17 points and you felt generous, I thought we had all 17 at halftime. I'm not even going to lie. Like, I thought it was over. So for us to come out in the second half and just play lights out, Matt Ryan played out of his mind in the second half. And, I mean, he was spreading the ball around a decent amount, you know, getting some, you know, underneath receivers open, you know, getting to Devontae Freeman. Oh, my God, Devontae Freeman, have a day. Like, if there was any question, you know, coming out of Atlanta right now, it's, you know, who's our running back now? Do we continue to feed Devontae Freeman, who had in standard scoring in fantasy, and I know a lot of people don't care about this, but this will tell you just how dominant he was. He had 37 fantasy points today. Like, he hasn't, I don't think he's had a game like that in his entire life. Like, not even middle school or high school he played this well. So, you know, I mean, realistically, just surprising game and a tale of two quarters, to be completely honest. So, I mean, Brian, I'll hand it off to you, but I mean, realistically, 3-0, and I don't know what my team is right now. You know, they've come from behind three times and they've had three surprising wins, but I don't know if I can deal with that level of emotion for 13 more games and then the playoffs if they make it.
Yeah, and you talked about going in down 11. I was actually really mad about how we handled the clock at the end of the first half. There was no reason we should have even given you all the ball with enough time to go down the field and get that field goal and get some momentum. A little clock mismanagement. I guess we were channeling our inner Eli Manning-Tom Coughlin combination. So I was kind of disappointed by that. But I did at the time, I really didn't think too much of it. We were still, you know, in control of the game. In the second half, I got to give you credit. Y'all moved Julio around brilliantly. He was matched up with Carr, Claiborne, and Patman all at different times. The one touchdown, he went across the field on Patman, and we had no help coming his way in time. He just ran past him, and it looked like a physical just mismatch all the way through. We held Julio in check in the first half, and he just went bonkers in the second half. And same with Devontae. I'm a big Devontae fan. I watched him at Florida State a ton. I haven't seen him run that hard, that strong, since he was at Florida State. And I think handing over the reins to Tevin Coleman might have been a little premature. He's definitely put his name back in the conversation. I just think we up front, we struggled. We, again, down Hardy, down Gregory, and down Jeremy Mincy. We got tied in the second half. We got no push up front. Matt Ryan had all day to stand around, scan the secondary, pick out who he wanted. And he just chopped us up. And we can't give an offense like that kind of time. For our offense, Whedon, the numbers are going to say Whedon played well, 22 of 26. Everything was underneath. Everything was a check down. And eventually in the second half, Atlanta was like, okay, that's fine. If you want to check everything down, we're going to bring up our defense, you know, 5 yards away from the line of scrimmage. If you're not going over the top, we're going to shut down those underneath passes. We're going to shut down that run game. Joseph Randle looked real strong at first. He only had 2 yards on his last 11 carries. He was shut down. His offense couldn't move the ball. We have to threaten the defense over the top. We didn't have a single reception for any of our outside receivers. The only wide receiver who caught a pass was Cole Beasley, and of course, he's just running around inside the slot. We have to threaten downfield. Terrence Williams, Devin Street, Bryce Butler, we have to just show we're willing to take those shots. If not, teams are going to do the same thing every week with Whedon, and we're going to have 8 in the box, 9 in the box, just stacking up on the run, and 28 points might be the max we get going forward. So we definitely have to be more aggressive. I was pleased with the line. I was pleased with how Randle ran in the first half, seeing those huge holes. He's definitely the guy. He has that home run ability that maybe even DeMarco didn't have last year. So a lot of good things offensively going forward. Let's just be more aggressive and take some more shots and you know, blow the top off a couple defenses out there.
Not only at the beginning with those checkdowns with Whedon, but also you would get in running positions. And it's just, I don't see any other teams that do what you do, where you just line up and it's clear what you're going to do and you just do it. and there's nothing the other team can do to stop it. Anytime you're down the goal line, you guys just drive it in. And it's clear. It's like they're running to the right. They're running to the left. You can just see it, and they just do it, and they can't be stopped. It's very impressive. Good game. You know what I mean? I think there is things, there's silver linings for Dallas to pull out of that game. If you guys do that well against a team like Atlanta, you should be able to beat teams like New Orleans. So it'll be an interesting week next week, especially obviously if Breeze doesn't play again. You guys should be, you know, fine in that game. We'll see how it goes. Moving on to Jacksonville, New England. This game, as you were joking earlier, went the way that we expected. New England blew them out 51-17. New England has been criticized for running the score up. I was just curious with you guys, is that the case here? Are they running the score up with Jacksonville? I don't believe in running the score up myself. I personally, if you don't want us to run the score up, stop us. If you can't stop us, then I don't know. We'd quit playing football. There's not our problem that you can't stop us. This isn't Little League. I'm not worried about you, you know, becoming like, you know, sad little kid about it. You're getting your butt kicked. You're professionals. Figure it out. What do you guys think? Was this running up the score? Is this mean to do to Jacksonville? What do you guys think?
Nah, you echoed my sentiments perfectly. Like you said, they're all pros. They're all getting paid to do this. If you don't want them to put 50 on you, go out there and do something about it. And then if I'm the team getting blown out, I don't want a team to slow down and go soft on me. I want you giving me the best shot all game long. And so I give New England credit. Hey, do what works. Put up points. I mean, it's not like they were going crazy. They were running the ball with LeGarrette Blount at the end of the game, and Jacksonville couldn't do a thing about it. So if you're getting compensated, go out there and stop somebody. There's no run up the score.
Yeah. The only criticism I could see is if – yeah, exactly. Well, go ahead, Tim. Do you have anything to say?
Yeah, I mean, even in my job, like, I'm in sales, and they'll pit us against each other, like, at work, even though we're all on the same team, to see who can do, like, the biggest numbers. And legitimately, like – we act like children, and we will run the score up on each other. And, like, even if we know we have something in the bag, and it's like, we should probably wait until next month to drop that. Now, if we're competing with each other, we're going to throw down. And, like, it's the same idea. Like, you want to know when you get hurt in football is when you don't give 100%. When you lay off on a play, that's when you get hurt. So, no, like, you never let up. You continue to put your foot down on their throat. And if, like Brian said, if they're supposed to stop you, or if, you know, they're getting upset, then they're going to stop you. Everybody in the NFL is a professional athlete, and they're all there for a reason. Like, nobody in this league is technically bad. So show up, strap up, and play, in my opinion. Like, yeah. I don't want to hear anybody be like, oh, they dropped 51 on us. They're being, you know, they're being bullies. There's no such thing as a bully in this league. There's not. There was one bully in the league, and now he's in jail, Aaron Hernandez. I'm looking at you, bro. You're the only bully that was in the league.
Yeah, no such thing as running up the score. I completely agree. A game that the score does not get run up in, Tampa Bay, Houston. No one here capable of running up anything. What did you think, Brian, looking at this game? How did this game go?
And for Tampa Bay, there wasn't much running, period. Our Buck Supan put his recap up, and that's what he talked about is Tampa Bay couldn't run the ball. They couldn't stop the run on Houston's side, and Tampa Bay's kicker, Kyle Brenza, is a complete joke. His official line was his grandma could kick better than Kyle Brenza. Tampa Bay lost by 10. Their kicker missed 3 field goals and an extra point. There's your 10 points right there. I don't see why the Bucs are having Jameis Winston throw it 36 times and only running it 20 times. I guess that's a product of the fact that they can't run the ball. That offensive line still is struggling. For Houston, I mean, that's the formula. Run it down team's throat. They gave the ball to Alfred Blue 31 times. And as soon as Arian Foster comes back, he's going to fill that role just as well. And get the ball to Hopkins. 8 for 101. That's... you know, you don't have much else other than that offensively. Do what works for you, and then just let your defense, you know, take care of teams that are weaker than you. Like I said, the Buccaneers, they couldn't get the ball efficiently enough to the outside. Evans had a good game coming back after not getting any catches last week. But Tampa Bay is going to be a struggle all year long. Houston, I think they can compete in that AFC South. We talked about the NFC East being the weakest division now, being the new NFC South. I don't think it is. I think it's the AFC South. I think that division is garbage. And Houston, they're 1-2. They're right in the thick of things. So They get Arian Foster back. They're going to be able to compete, sad as it is. And who knows, if Indy doesn't step it up, that's going to be the new NFC South. So good win for Houston getting off the schneid. But ultimately, Tampa Bay, find yourself a kicker, please.
Pittsburgh, St. Louis. Pittsburgh pulled this game out 12-6, but at a major cost. They lose Roethlisberger for, they're saying, about 4 weeks, maybe more. Vic into the game went 5 for 6 for 38 yards. He did not look amazing. That sounds better than it actually was. And the problem is the Roethlisberger-less Steelers have to play this Thursday against Baltimore. Baltimore, as we talked about, may be time for the dirt on the coffin, but at the same time, that team is going to try to take advantage of this. They know it's a short week. They're not doing well at all, and they need this win. Yeah, it's really a shame to see Roethlisberger go down, man. Any of these quarterbacks, like, same, I feel the same way with Romo. We just don't want to see injuries. You know, it's not, these are not the guys we want to see hurt. Not that we want to see any players hurt, but the quarterbacks are so important to seeing good football. It's a shame anytime to see one of them go down. Do you guys have anything you want to add to this game? Do you think, I mean, St. Louis, the only thing I can really say there is, it's amazing. Well, we see that Seattle is a little broken, but that you guys can beat Seattle and then you lose to Washington and then you can't pull this game out. I think at the end of the day, St. Louis, just really that offense is not, it's not functioning yet. And it hasn't been for years and years, so it's nothing new. We'll see if he can ever get it together, but clearly that's a problem. What do you guys think of the San Diego Minnesota game? This was a game you seemed to even talk about. Brian, what did you think of this game?
So Minnesota gets the win 31-14. And I'm going to call Pod Vader out right away on this one. He's been dogging Minnesota from the start. Now, granted, I might have been a little too uppity on Minnesota. I said they could win the division, possibly a little premature on my part. But Minnesota looks good. Adrian Peterson, if you didn't know from last week, dude's back. Dude is in pre-suspension form. Personal feelings aside, he's the best back in the NFL, no doubt. And Minnesota, we talked about the formula with Houston. Formula Minnesota is feed Adrian Peterson. They should be 3-0. I don't know why they didn't give him the ball against San Francisco in week, but they gave him the ball 20 times today. You're 126 yards and 2 touchdowns. And you keep Teddy Bridgewater from to only having 24 throws today. I think they can compete with any team in the NFC. This, like I said, this is the formula. This is what they're going to do. That defense is strong. I am a little worried. Xavier Rhodes did lead the game with a head injury. Could be kind of serious. We don't know exactly what's going on with him. So it looks like they're going to have to put their first-round pick, Trey Waynes, in the starting lineup if Rhodes can't go. So a little concern there. But that defense, Zimmer's got them playing good. And like I said, I think for sure they're at least the second-best team in that division. And that playoff team. So, Pod Vader, slow your roll on the Minnesota hate. They're going to be competing all year long. San Diego, you're going to get Phillip Rivers killed. That line is atrocious. They had 3 offensive linemen leave the game with injuries. Rivers got sacked 4 times. He took a brutal hit and had to leave the game himself. They pulled him late just because they didn't want to get him broken in half. You got to find a way to protect the franchise. If not, this team is in a bunch of trouble. The running game's hot and cold. We're still kind of learning what Melvin Gordon is. So until they figure out what to do up front, Phillip Rivers ducking cover because you're going to be running life. And we already know that man's not athletic. So San Diego's got to figure something out. KC and Denver are clearly ahead of them in that division. So it could be a long season in San Diego. I don't know. Phillip Rivers, get used to it, buddy. I don't think it's going to change.
You say KC and Denver. Is Oakland better? Where does Oakland stand in your eyes with San Diego?
I don't think they're quite there yet, but 2 months from now, we could have this conversation, and I could admit to you I'm completely wrong. Their arrow is Oakland's arrow is definitely pointing up, where San Diego seems to be trending downward. So definitely not a place that San Diego fans thought they'd be and want to be in 2015.
All right, Indianapolis, Tennessee. This game was very, very close. The final score was 35-33 in favor of Indianapolis. Just want to look at these quarterbacks, right? So Luck, 18 for 30, 260 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Mariota, 27 for 44, 367, 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Just interesting to look at those two against each other. The big story of this game is that the Indianapolis Colts were only had 14 points, and they scored 21 points in the fourth quarter. Gore has two touchdowns. Luck, obviously, is getting them downfield when he needs to. I think the big difference here, one, Luck is great when he's really needing to be at the very crunch times. But the other side is that they have a Gore. Mariota in this game had Antonio Andrews. And obviously that's not someone that people think is some powerhouse running back. He may be fine. He had a good game. I don't mean to pick on the kid. But I think Mariota needs some other weapons is, I think, the end of this story here. The fact that they put up 33 against Indy and almost beat them is very impressive. But I think Indy really needed this win, and they pulled it out. Looking at the San Francisco-Arizona game, what did you think? How did this game go, Brian? I know that obviously San Francisco started off on some very slippery bad moments. Tell us about it. How did this game look?
It was one-sided from the start. Every time I looked up, Arizona had another touchdown on the board. Final score ended up being 47-7. It was over, you know, an hour into the game. Colin Kaepernick, you got to value the ball, sir. You can't throw these back foot falling down across the field passes and expect to get away with it. You had two pick sixes today, four interceptions. You're on a team that doesn't have many weapons either. I've got a buddy of mine, huge San Francisco fan, and I asked him, when's the last time y'all had a legitimate number one receiver? And the first name he came up with was T.O., and that's been quite a while ago. So, I know you don't have a ton of help out there, but you can't make foolish decisions yourself, or you're going to lose games by 40. But I really want to jump on Arizona, and I want y'all to get on this. Before the season, when we were asked to do our picks, the Super Bowl, in the NFC, I was down to Dallas and Arizona, and I really, really thought about picking Arizona. Last year, they were the best team in the NFL before Carson Palmer got hurt. And I know they haven't beaten anybody this year. They've only beaten the Saints, the Bears, and the 49ers, but they've looked impressive. Palmer's back, healthy. The downfall of Larry Fitzgerald was a little wide overrated. Like, Fitzgerald looks like in his prime again, five touchdowns in 2 weeks. Good grief. I'm going out right now and saying Arizona is not only the best team in the division, they're better than Seattle, hands down. They're not just the best team in the NFC. I think they're better than Green Bay. I'm going as far to say they're right now the best team in the NFL, New England and all included. That team has it, the defense is still great. The Honey Badger coming back healthy finally. He had two interceptions today. Then you have that offense. And like I said, as long as Carson Palmer stays healthy and they have a legit quarterback, this offense, they have weapons, you know, all over the field. Don't have Andre Ellington. All of a sudden you plug in Chris Johnson and he's running for two touchdowns. This team is as complete a team as there is in the NFL. Their defense, to me, is, I don't want to say far better than New England, but significantly better than New England. So I'm calling right now, after week three, the best team in the NFL is the Arizona Cardinals. Y'all call me crazy.
No, I think that's a bold call, and I understand. I don't think I agree, but I appreciate that you're trying to go for that. I mean, that's really early to call that. And like you said, it all goes around Palmer's health. But I see your argument, man. I think it's hard to disagree. I'm not going to try to put up another team. I mean, obviously the Patriots, like you point out, is somebody would point up, put up against that team. That would be one argument you would hear. But I think it's a fair argument. I can't say I got somebody better. What do you think, Tim? Would you agree, or where do you think of Arizona? You got respect?
I have mad respect for Arizona. That defense is terrifying. And, you know, like you guys were saying earlier, like Kaepernick not respecting the ball, that sort of thing. I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily that or just that this defense is that disgusting. And, you know, I mean, Carson Palmer's a good quarterback, too, as long as he can stay healthy. I disrespected Arizona when we did our, like, preseason, you know, predictions and that sort of thing. And I thought that Seattle would run away with that division because of bringing in Jimmy Graham. I didn't feel like they lost very much. I felt like they only got stronger, and all the questions that they had, I felt like they got an answer for. And with Cam Chancellor being back, I'm sure that, you know, that's sorted. But, I mean, I was sitting there, and, you know, again, you know, I'll bring up something fantasy-related. But, I mean, I started the Arizona Cardinals defense, and I was not projected to win, but I definitely won. And, I mean, when Kaepernick's going to give two pick sixes in the first quarter, like,
you can't do that. And the Arizona defense is just terrifying. That's legitimately all I have to say. And I'm very, very, very happy that we don't have to play them this year.
And I'll throw out one more bold statement. I'll throw out one more one. In that division, I say Carson Palmer's the best quarterback. I know Russell Wilson gets all the love and all the credit, and it's well-deserved. When healthy, I think Carson Palmer is the better team leader and is the better quarterback in that division. He makes so much of a difference to that team, I mean, as evidenced by how they just fell off the cliff last year. So, again, I know it's being bold, and I know we're only 3 weeks in, but I'm so impressed with what I've seen from that team, both last year and then this year with a healthy Carson Palmer. So, that's going to be a tough beat in that division. I can't wait to see Arizona and Seattle match up on the field.
Speaking of Seattle, I mean, that's our next game. Seattle finally gets their win, right? They shut Chicago down, the Cutler-less Chicago, who is already – that team is already not playing well. But on top of it, they're really injured right now, and Seattle just destroyed them. Seattle has back Chancellor. They have their safety. I don't think that was the difference here. That doesn't really matter. But they won the game 26-0. Chicago Tom writes in. He's got some thoughts on this game. His big thing was saying that the defense actually played respectable. Purnell McPhee, he thought, was worth every penny, and you could see it in this game. He really liked Forte. He liked his vision in this game. Jimmy Clausen did not play good. I don't think anyone expected Jimmy to play well. He liked that they were getting pressure on Wilson. And he was very surprised, which I think is a really interesting point. He didn't understand why Seattle wasn't going deep on them when Arizona just killed them with the deep attack last week. But I think this is exactly what you were getting at, Brian, is that the difference is that I don't think Russell Wilson goes deep nearly as well as Carson does. And why did Arizona go to that? It's because that's what they do well. They're just an attacking offense. They get the ball downfield. They have several receivers that are frightening down the field. And that's the difference. And I guess, you know, obviously, I think Seattle watched that tape. They probably saw that, but they just knew they could beat them without that. So that's an interesting game there. Seattle's finally getting on its horse. It'll be interesting to see how that division goes. Will Arizona be the Kings, or will Seattle be able to defend their title? Moving on to our last game here, Buffalo-Miami. Brian, you took a look at this game. What do you think? Ron, our super fan with the Dolphins, was so proud of this team. I can't be too picky. I mean, my team's only 1-2, and I was very cocky before the season as well. But the Miami Dolphins have not looked good. How did this game go?
And where they especially have not looked good is in that vaunted front four. Me and Ron went back and forth. We talked about the most improved defensive lines, and he put his team right up there, of course, with the signing of Ndamukong Suh. If I heard correctly, they only have one sack in their first three games, which is unbelievable, thinking of Suh up there with Cameron Wake and Olivier Vernon. I know Wake's been a little banged up, but I thought their D-line was just going to be setting the tone in these games, and it really hasn't. Tyrod just had all day to throw back there. And then on the other side, Miami, they've been struggling to run the ball. Again, Lamar Miller a little banged up. A buddy of mine, big Dolphins fan, he said Tannehill's playing fine. He doesn't put any of the blame on him, but he just wants to see it in the trenches. If not, teams like Buffalo especially are just going to run over them, and that's what happened today. I'm so intrigued by Buffalo's roster construction. In a quarterback-driven league, they were trying to do it essentially, you know, with talent at every other position except the quarterback. Well, all of a sudden we realize they found a quarterback. Tyrod Taylor looks legit. Threw for 277, three touchdowns today. He's got a 74% completion percentage through three games. And he, too, has weapons all over the field with Harvin and Watkins and LeSean McCoy. And now you factor in Carlos Williams running for 100 today. He's got a touchdown in each of the first three games. Buffalo, a lot of the conversation was, who's the second-best team in the division after New England? I thought it was Miami going into the season. I am prepared at this point to rip that up and tell you that Buffalo is, without a doubt, the second-best team in this division. I hope Tyrod can keep this up. Fellow Virginia boy, I'm excited to see this. But, man, if they can put up numbers like this on offense with the names they have on defense, when they play New England again, you might get another barn burner. So Buffalo, again, they've made a couple statements in the first couple weeks, look real strong, look like they'll at least be a wild card contender, and could be more now that Tyrod established himself as the guy there. It said a lot that they were willing to trade Matt Cassel to us, that they didn't feel like they needed that veteran presence back there backing them up. So just among the guys I'm most impressed with this week has to be Tyrod Taylor. So Buffalo's looking good.
Yeah, that's an impressive. I mean, you know, for that team to be playing as well as they have been, I totally agree with you. I think they're the second best team in that division, and it's going to be some great battles when they go against New England. So, yeah, that's it for the week, guys. Thank you guys so much for joining me. Just to look really quick, there's a game going on right now, Denver-Detroit. It looks like – what's the score? It looks like Denver is up at half, 14-6. So we'll see how that ends up going in the morning. Thank you all for joining us. We'll be back on Thursday. Pod Vader will be doing a preview show of all the games coming up next week, week 4. Tim, thank you for being here. Tim, if anybody wants to find you, what's a way that they can follow you on Twitter? What is your handle and such?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, at Tim is hiding. Also want to do an update that I just saw come across Twitter as we were doing this. Ben Roethlisberger does not have a torn ACL. It looks like it's just a sprained MCL, and he should be out 4 to 6 weeks. So it is good news for Steelers Nation. So, yeah, so I feel like our Steelers fans that listen are going to be a little bit more excited for that. I mean, Michael Vick's probably one of the better backups in the league, but definitely good to see that Ben Roethlisberger's not out for the season because he's a gamer. But again, yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, at Tim is hiding, and yeah, I look forward to anything. If there was any issues with any of my analysis, please give me a shout, and we'll battle it out on Twitter. I look forward to it.
It's nice. And Brian, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at SharpShot3Ball. We can talk about anything up there, Cowboys, college, basketball, anything you want to talk about.
Thank you, guys. We are Next Fan Up. My name is Mark Sitko. You can follow us at NFU Podcast on Twitter. On Facebook, you can just type in Facebook. You just type in Next Fan Up, and you will find us. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will see you later.
Hi, guys. This is Mark Sitko, your Philadelphia Eagles super fan, and I'm your regular Sunday night host of Next Fan Up. Tonight on the podcast, we have Tim, the Falcons superfan. Hi, guys. I'm the greatest superfan. Also, we have Brian, the Cowboys superfan.
What's going on, Sitko?
Not much, man. You know, down with the Cowboys, up with the Eagles. Woo, fly, Eagles, fly. Tebow's the best. Is he on here? I really hope he can hear me, because that hurts my throat to do his voice like that. He doesn't even sound like that. Like, it's painful.